And welcome to Future Intended, where we share stories about people and programs supported by Hamilton Community Foundation and the issues that matter to our community. The title comes from our tagline, History Made, Future Intended. We've been driving positive change in Hamilton since 1954, and we're ready to do it now and forever.
I'm Terry Cook, and we want to talk today about animal welfare and the role that pets play in our lives and the challenges that that presents. But I want to welcome to the program two guests who are deeply committed to the welfare of animals in this community. Greg Evans is with Progressive Animal Welfare Services, PAWS. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And Janine Stoll is with Lady Bird Animal Sanctuary. And I always like to start the program with a little bit of biography, a little bit about you and how you came to be involved in the organizations that you're involved with, how they manifest themselves in the community, and tell us a bit about your own background and the organization that you're working on behalf of.
Sure. Well, Lady Bird Animal Sanctuary started back in about 2010 when we rescued our first animal. It came about with myself and two of my very best friends, Lisa Wynn and Melissa McClelland. Mm-hmm. We are musicians and we had a sort of a side project going when we were in our early 20s. And then everyone kind of branched off and did their own thing, but we remained best friends and we thought, oh man, we work so well together and we love hanging out together. There's got to be something else that we could do just for fun. And we really all love animals. And we noticed that there was a big issue in Hamilton with the Hamilton Animal Control. There was a high euthanasia rate at the time mm-hmm. at the local shelter. And we said, well, maybe we can try to get some of these animals out and we can foster them and try to get them adopted. And mm-hmm. so we rescued our first animal back in the end of 2010. And it just went on from there. So.
And your latest milestone was 1,000 animals.
Yeah, more than that, 1,500 animals.
That's amazing.
Yeah, just over in 11 years. And yeah, just through an amazing foster network, we've got anytime going between like 40 and 60 foster homes. And we service them all. We cover the cost of all the medical care, all the food supplies, and all the fosters have to do is just love the animals until we can get them into forever homes. So it's been an amazing run and yep. and we're going to continue to do it.
And yeah. and given your musical connections, yeah. you guys did a fundraiser with some of Canada's best and brightest. Jim Cuddy, yeah. Brian Adams. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we had a great showing in 2020 when the pandemic hit. Fundraising sort of went sideways. We have a high-end event that we try to do every year called Lady Bird Soiree, where we have some amazing musical guests and great vegan food and like an open bar. And so everyone really looks forward to this, but we had to postpone it due to COVID. And so we still needed to fundraise. What could we do? And so we reached out to some of our musical friends in the community and we got, yeah, Sarah McLachlan, Brian Adams, Jim Cuddy, Jan Arden, and they all did these little performances for our virtual soiree, and we ended up raising about $50,000 that night, and it was amazing. Right around Giving Tuesday too, which is great because everyone likes to give money on Giving Tuesday, which is usually around the beginning of December.
Good stuff. So,
yeah.
Greg, same question. Tell us about you and tell us about PAWS.
Sure. So I'm very fortunate to have joined PAWS about a year ago, but the organization dates back to about the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. And it actually began as a more of a political action group in London mm-hmm. Than a fundraising nonprofit or a rescue organization. And without boring you with the 3-hour long story, because we don't have that much airtime, yep. It's kind of morphed now today into we see we like to help. We're half for helping humans and half for helping animals. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we help fund, fundraise and then fund emergency medical procedures, spays and neuters, mm-hmm. All sorts of things for low-income families mm-hmm. that might come, their family pet might have an emergency or some unexpected expense that they have to pay. And we help to fund those things and give them access to those that they might not normally have. And we can imagine with the economy doing what it's doing and since COVID hit, yeah. that's just been amplified throughout Southern Ontario. So we're proud to operate in several cities and towns around Southern Ontario and Southwestern Ontario helping families meet those needs. And we don't have the resources available to do what we'd like to do. Yep. There's so much more that we and other organizations could be doing, and we would love to do more.
And you're a board member, so you're a volunteer. I'm assuming in your day job, you're doing something else.
I do. So I'm proud to work at the Chamber of Commerce, Brant for Brant. I've been there for 2.5 years or so. Prior to that, I spent several years with the Ontario government, working kind of in between Kitchener-Waterloo and London. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Hamilton, Brantford, of course, and I live in Stratford. So spend a lot of time driving around. I hit the 400 series a lot and see a lot of Southern Ontario.
Very good. Actually, I have to tell you a quick philanthropy story relative to pets and animals, because you talked about spay and neuter. And we at the Community Foundation a number of years ago now had an extraordinary gift of capital from a now deceased Hamilton cab driver who was wise enough to collect cab plates, buy them well before Uber and before the prices dropped, and sold them and left us a major gift that provides $60,000 to $70,000 a year in perpetuity, a significant amount of which goes to spay and neuter programs for low-income families. And it was interesting because at the time, of course, I got to do the usual media stuff with kittens and puppies. And interestingly enough, we got some criticism. And the criticism was, you know, with all of the needs out there in the community, from healthcare to education to the environment, why would somebody leave a gift of that amount to pets and the well-being of animals? And we said, because everybody has a right to do with their hard-earned money what they are passionate about, and animals are a part of our world and of our lives. And I just want to ask you about that, because sometimes people, and I particularly think about some of the work you're doing around houseless people, 20% of whom own pets. And oftentimes you will hear veiled criticisms about, well, with all the priorities and the need and the economic hardship, why would you own an animal? And it, to the rest of us, we would say, well, of course they're a priority. You know, they deserve care and respect and love. How do you respond to that in terms of the priorities we set as community?
I think, you know, everyone's on their own journey, and what is important to the individual is what's important to the individual. And animals bring so much to our lives, so much enrichment, and they teach us a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if someone is wanting to leave a financial gift to help animal welfare, then that's definitely a personal choice. And there's so many people that love animals, you know, and animals deserve a chance at a good shot. And, you know, when someone adopts an animal, they don't always plan ahead. They don't know that they're going to have an expensive surgery or a cancer or something. And so, you know, the fact that Greg's organization even exists to be able to help people when those things come up that they can't plan for, it's, you know, it's just part of the animal welfare equation. Like, we help the animals that are kind of at the end of the road, where they've run out of options for help. Right. We try to help them, but your organization helps keep them with their families, you know, and helps them to live amazing lives. So,
I'm sure on the advocacy side, you get pushback in terms of why this should be a priority, and particularly where you're advocating for things like no-kill shelters. Not everybody can agree with that. And talk us through how you weigh the places in which you get involved in debates or discussions about policy and advocacy.
Sure. And especially when it comes to advocating for things that cost taxpayer money, that's when city councils become very interested in what we're saying. We have a lot of experience. Luckily, a small group of very committed individuals 15 years ago or so were very committed, especially in the city of London, to having those discussions and navigating those to make it easier for us now. I think the narrative shifted a little bit, even from our parents and grandparents' generations, when family animals were seen almost more as possessions. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't for every pet, I'm sure. Right. Even our parents and grandparents' generations had pets they loved and dogs that slept inside. But it was much more common, I think, to have pets
in the barn. Or running around.
That's exactly it. Or they live in the backyard. Yep. Don't come inside, even during blizzards. Yep. They scavenge and eat what they can find. And
Or utilitarian, like they're hired as working dogs on farms, or, you know, mousers like in barns, things like that.
Exactly their equipment.
Yeah.
And now I think the narrative shifted that it's much more common to consider your pets members of your family. Mm-hmm. And the mental health aspect of it, I think, helps as well. I think now we recognize more than ever that having an animal companion is so helpful for mental health that from that angle, it's very, very important to help our animal friends and to help our friends and neighbors that need that help to make payments or to shelter animals or to obtain one. So I think it's much easier in the 2020s than it was even in the 2000s or 2010s, and especially in the 80s and 90s and earlier, to have those conversations. I think people generally are much more receptive now to doing those things.
For sure. Yeah. And I have to say, as a pet person, the social capital piece, it's the way you meet your neighbors. It's the thing that compels you to get out and get exercise and see your neighborhood or see open space. And it just adds immeasurably to our lives. And yes, there is a cost to that. And at the end of the road, there's also a heartbreak involved as we've all, it's a universal experience of both love and loss. I can't imagine our world without animals. I want to start with the pandemic, and it's obviously changed the world. It's changed our lives, but it has obviously driven both demand for adoptions, but in often case ends poorly and or tragically, and creates enormous challenges both economically and in terms of the well-being of pets and animals for organizations like yours. So I'd love to hear a little bit on that from you in terms of, what have we learned? What's the experience been like? And how has it contributed to the well-being or the challenges of taking care of all creatures?
Yeah. I don't know what you guys predicted would happen. I was kind of worried for the opposite, that people would start surrendering their pets at the beginning of the pandemic because they realized that they couldn't afford them. Mm-hmm. But I mean, with government supports and everyone was sort of told to stay at home, everyone's like, well, I'm lonely now. I don't have someone to spend time with. So they would adopt animals. And then when things started to get back to normal and people started to realize, oh, I'm too busy or training's too hard, I didn't do my research.
It's a big responsibility.
It's huge, yeah. So now the shelter system is full again. Rescue organizations are not taking any intakes because they don't have space. They run out of money, things like that. So we're kind of dealing with a bit of an opposite problem. I can see signs that it's starting to get a little bit better. It's hard. I think it's always going to be a problem. Like you're never going to be sort of flush with, no animals in shelters. There's always going to be some kind of problem that needs to be addressed. So,
Same question. How's PAWS experienced the pandemic?
We've seen the same thing. So we noticed there's an influx of adoptions over COVID since the beginning of COVID. And it's of course hard to say why. But the easy answer and kind of the obvious answer is that people are spending more time at home, like Janine mentioned. And for folks that live alone, it goes back to the mental health issue that we talked about, that, hey, I need some sort of social activity. I need something to do. I need to walk a dog. And they're adopting those pets. And an increase in adoptions is great news. I think we're in a wait and see approach about how that's going to shake out, especially with the domino effect we're seeing, COVID into our mini recession or whatever this might become, economy-wise. When your grocery bill's up and your gas bill's up and your hours are cut at work.
Interest rates are up, mortgage rate.
That's exactly it. So you've got to choose between rent, groceries, and dog food. What's the first thing that gets cut? So I think we haven't quite seen the end result. So it's a wait and see, but always preparing and expecting for the worst. To be prepared, I think, is the right thing to do.
I want to go back for a minute with you, Greg, to something we talked about briefly at the front end of the show, which is the extent to which people who are precariously or unhoused have pets and the challenges for them, because we know that when you see and hear about the controversies around encampments in virtually every community in Southern Ontario, one of the challenges is that folks who might otherwise go to a shelters don't allow you to come with your pets. So people are in the unconscionable position of either, putting a roof over their head or staying in a tent with their pet. And Talk a little bit about that kind of a challenge for people who are at the economic margins.
It's a massive challenge, and even beyond that, access for those folks is a huge challenge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So accessing even programs like the ones we have for them, if let's say, for instance, you've got a dog in your tent or in your whatever shelter you've got, and it gets sick.
Right.
Well, do you bring it to a vet and risk maybe the vet sees that you're unhoused and maybe your pet's taken away from you?
Yeah.
So now what do you do? Do you keep your sick dog in the tent and not seek out care?
Yeah.
Or finding, like in Paws's case, there's an application process. Is that accessible? Is an online or paper application accessible to folks that don't have access to the internet or a printer or even have access to a library or access to knowledge? How do you find out about it?
Mm-hmm. So stuff access that we take for granted.
Accessing those folks and providing them access to what we do is a challenge for us and a hurdle for us too. Yeah. So I think it becomes layered and becomes exponentially more difficult for those folks. And finding ways to access them is a really important step for us.
For sure.
Like even in a case of trying to get subsidized help, you often have to provide like your tax return or something like that. And like, you know, marginalized people sometimes don't really pay attention to that stuff. They may not, you know, keep track. And so if that's a barrier to being able to get access to some of these social programs, the programs exist, but they don't, they're not available to everybody.
Right. Janine, one of the things we've talked about household pets, family pets. We've not talked about agricultural or farm animals and the role that a sanctuary like yours plays relative to especially farm animals that are approaching the end of their life, infirm, no longer wanted or needed. Talk a bit about that.
So currently, Lady Bird is a foster network, but our ultimate goal has always been to someday acquire a rural property where we can welcome in farm animals for rehabilitation and just let them live their lives in peace.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. There's the social problems with it and the idea of, you know, people's mindsets changing in terms of swaying over to like a more meat-free lifestyle, which I think I think it's probably going to be an inevitability somewhere in our future where that just kind of changes everyone's sort of consciousness, but we're not there yet. Yep. So if we can kind of create a space where we can help to educate people as well as create a safe haven for some of these animals that we want to see them live out their lives in a compassionate environment, that's our ultimate goal.
Excellent. So, both of your organizations depend hugely on volunteer efforts. I'm curious about the role that volunteers play and what it is that you see volunteers delivering that is making a difference in the lives of all creatures.
Sure. Volunteers are huge for us. So beyond our board, we have a network of dozens and dozens of volunteers who do everything from attending events to helping us with marketing, on the finance end, all sorts of things. And of course the fundraising end.
Mm-hmm.
So, when PAWS began, we've transformed a lot over the last couple of decades or so. We began with a very small group of really committed individuals in London, working hard, doing not quite what we're doing now, but more as a political organizing group. And the reason for that was that in the mid 2000s in London, and somebody could make a documentary about this and make a lot of money. In the mid 2000s in London, animal control was kind of the wild west. Mm-hmm. So there were several several rescue groups and volunteer organizations kind of working in silos, and they weren't really cooperating. It was a little disorganized. So there was no really central animal control policy or group or guideline. And in 2006, the City of London decided they would centralize that. And there was a 5-year contract granted to a for-profit group, a business to do animal control in London. And of course, that group was very motivated to save money in any way they could and to make money on their bottom line.
Yeah.
So what began happening is they took over the animal control facility, but animals cost money if they're alive. So as populations grew, a lot of euthanasia was happening, very minimal medical care was happening. The situation for animals and for pet owners, especially in London,
was pretty dire. Mm-hmm. So PAWS and a few other organizations began closed-door meetings with city councilors and other kind of stakeholders in the city, and attending city council meetings, meetings with the mayor, and kind of drumming up support and building awareness of the issue. And this stuff kind of continued till 2011, when the contract was up and the city put that up for bid and PAWS bid on that contract to take over animal control for the City of London. Now, long story short, PAWS didn't get the contract. The same company that had that contract was granted it again for another 5 years. But due to the work PAWS had done lobbying and mm-hmm. in political organizing, we got a bunch of big wins.
Yeah.
So London was declared a no-kill city. Mm-hmm. So if an animal is healthy and adoptable, it won't be euthanized. We got a lot of dog parks that didn't exist. So outdoor off-leash dog parks existed. A city-run spay and neuter clinic mm-hmm. that was very low cost for the public.
Yep.
So folks that didn't have access to spaying and neutering their pets now had access to that at a low cost. And a whole host of other things. Expanded facilities, bigger, a bigger shelter, and a whole bunch of stuff that didn't exist before. So even though it was a loss and that PAWS didn't get the contract,
It made a difference.
It made a difference, yeah. And we got a lot of wins. So fast forward to today, we're a lot more focused on the fundraising side, funding side, and we have a lot more volunteers than we had back then. It was a very small group back then. So now our struggle and what we're trying to do is build awareness, raise money, and we're very, very grateful to the Hamilton Community Foundation for helping in that sense as well. Mm-hmm. But building our team of volunteers and building our team of fundraisers and raising money, we were really lucky to have funded 69 animals in 2022.
Yep.
The goal for 2023 is to fund 140 animals.
Well done.
So we're going to try our very best.
Hazel says
Hazel likes the idea.
Great work.
She loves it.
Last 2 minutes, do you talk a little bit about the importance of volunteers and what they do and what the future looks like for Lady Bird?
Yeah, biggest thing for us is our foster homes. Our foster homes are, you know, our lifeblood. They just they give the animals safe haven until they can be adopted, and without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. We have other volunteers that, you know, work on things like fundraising events, things like that. Anyone that wants to offer their talents is welcome to get in touch. We're going to keep pushing towards the goal of getting the farm, and hopefully we can welcome visitors one day to come see and adopt an animal into their home as well.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Best of luck.
Thank you.
As always, this time goes much too quickly, but Greg Evans from PAWS, I want to say thank you for not only sharing your experience with us today, but the work that your organization is doing and for your commitment and volunteerism. And Janine Stoll from the Lady Bird Animal Sanctuary, good luck with that vision and thanks for the difference that you are making.
Thank you for listening to Future Intended, where we talk about the people and programs supported by Hamilton Community Foundation and the issues that matter to our community. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, hit subscribe to get future podcasts. Follow us on social media, subscribe to our e-newsletter for the latest news and stories, and visit our website at hamiltoncommunityfoundation.ca.